Matthew 8, starting in verse 5. This is about the centurion. I think it's the first time he's mentioned. But I believe this is the same centurion that that pierced the side of Christ on the crucifixion.
Centurion, a soldier?
Yeah, he's a centurion, is
over 100.
Captain of 100. More than likely he was, well, if you believe what, there's a lot of stuff written about him, and this one sounds the most logical. He had been a well-known, well-thought-of soldier, and then the rank of centurion is very high. And so, in his older age, he developed some kind of eye disease. And so they sent him, until his retirement was complete, they sent him to a simple, rather simple place where they didn't think they'd have a lot of physical attacks, etc. And his name was, anybody remember?
Longinus.
And his job, the Roman government heard about Christ, and so they assigned him to keep an eye on him. And so, for some reason, instead of him assigning somebody to do it, he did it himself, which is probably, that's to me this part of the story that doesn't, that would seem highly unusual. But anyway, so he was following Christ on what he was doing and seeing if he was a rabble rouser and all that kind of stuff. In the same way, the Jews sent people, the Sanhedrin sent people to keep an eye on him too. So the centurion and some of the people from Sanhedrin followed him, or had people follow him. In this case, it was probably right now he was following him. And so in chapter 8, verse 5, and when Jesus was entered into Capernaum, there came unto him a centurion beseeching him and saying, Lord, my servant lieth at home sick of the palsy, grievously tormented. And Jesus said unto him, I will come and heal him. The centurion answered and said, Lord, I am not worthy that thou shouldest come under my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. For I am a man under authority, having soldiers under me. And I say to this man, go, and he goeth; to another, come, and he cometh; and to my servant, do this, and he doeth it. When Jesus heard it, he marveled and said to them that followed, verily I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel. And I say unto you that many shall come from the east and the west, and shall sit down with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the children of the kingdom shall be cast out into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And Jesus said unto the centurion, go thy way. As thou hast believed, be so it done unto thee. And the servant was healed in the same hour. Now, talk about radical faith. That's it. That's the kind of faith that he expects of us. And I mean, the idea that the centurion's servant was healed, the self-same, the moment, actually, that it's another way of saying the hours. But it was the moment that he said it, the centurion was healed. The centurion's servant was healed. Now, the whole response of the centurion is a incredible lesson for us, if we can see it. Anybody have any response to it?
I have a story about that. When I was in the Army, I was a squad leader and had about 10 men I was responsible for. And one of them was a biker, a big guy, and rebellious, and causing trouble among our squad. So I had to dress him down. I took him into my room. He's a big guy, and I'm not, but I had to do it, and so I was nervous, very nervous. But I stood up to him, and I started telling him the way it was, and he didn't like what I was saying, and it was obvious he didn't like it, and he was getting a little puffed up. But something happened inside of me where I felt the entire Army standing behind me as my authority, and as soon as I had that sense and feeling, I spoke differently to him, and this guy shrunk, and he got very small. He heard what I said.
That's a great example.
Okay, that's it. And I never forgot that sense, and that's the same thing. That's a belief, and that's like we have the entire host of heaven standing behind us when we.
A barracks leader, I forgot, he gave me a title, but I can't remember it, in basic training, before they took me out. And I had many instances like that, but mine weren't different. I was always yelling at them, so I didn't have that humility.
But that changed when the moment of seeing it, it was like...
Then you had authority.
I had. And when I had it, I wasn't afraid anymore, and my voice changed. It was like I was an observer of this experience.
That's great. Let's look at Luke 7 real quick. Let's see it about the centurion there. It's essentially the same, but just to see that it's verse 1, Luke 7. Now when he had ended all his sayings in the audience of the people, he entered into Capernaum, and a certain centurion servant who was dear unto him was sick and ready to die. And when he heard of Jesus, he sent unto him the elders of the Jews, beseeching him that he would come and heal his servant. And when they came to Jesus, they besought him instantly, saying that he was worthy for whom he should do this. For he loveth our nation, he has built us a synagogue. Then Jesus went with them. And when he was not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to him, saying unto him, Lord, trouble not thyself, for I am not worthy that thou shouldest enter under my roof. Wherefore neither thought I myself worthy to come unto thee, but say in a word, and my servant shall be healed. For I am a man set under authority, having under me soldiers, and I say unto one, go, and he goeth, and unto another, come, and he cometh. And my servant do this, and he doth it. And when Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him, and turned about him about, and said unto the people that followed him, I say unto you, I have not found so great a faith, no, not in Israel. And they that were sent, returning to the house, found the servant whole that had been sick. So it's slightly different, but it's the same essence. And effectively, it shamed. I'm sure the Sanhedrin had stories about it, but I don't have any record of what those were.
I think your word a moment ago, the humility of that position is where this,
All right, let's. Let's go to Mark 5. The thing that I want us to see is there isn't a different faith or different thing going on in the Old Testament. It's the same in the Old Testament as it is in the New Testament. Faith, without faith, it's impossible to please Him. But faith seems to be a wide entrance. Until you finally find out that true faith is as small as a pinhole. Because it's only when you have that fullness of faith with the same kind of belief as that servant had or that centurion had. That's what sanctification is about. And it's this process, this thing going from faith in Christ to the faith of Christ. And that's the same track that Israel had from going from the world to the mercy seat. And so for some it takes a long, long time. For others it's instantaneous, but it costs you everything at that moment. For others it's a struggle. So don't worry about which way it is, but just understand that the end result is that same faith that we just saw with the centurion. Again, for some it's instantaneous, for others a long time, for others a constant struggle. But never think that you've arrived. The farther you go, the lower your seat will be. Yeah. All right. Go to chapter 5, verse 21. And when Jesus, he had just dealt with with a young man that was demon possessed, and he was showing incredible strength, and everybody was afraid of him. They had him tied, chained up. It's the only way they could hold him, if I remember right. But and then the demons, he had more than one demon apparently. But then Jesus cast the demons out, and the pigs ran over the cliff into the ocean. And so now that was at this, I can't ever pronounce it, but it's Gadarene. Anyway, so now it's the next story.
Where are we?
Mark 5, starting in verse 21. The first part of it, from 5:1 to the other, was what I just said. And when Jesus was passed over again by ship unto the other side, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet and besought him greatly, saying, My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him. Now, why didn't Jesus here do the same thing that he did with the centurion?
Kind of asked him to differently. The first guy said, just say it.
Well, I know, but why didn't that happen? He didn't even get a chance to say it, but he fell at his feet, which was a biggie.
Yeah.
Especially since he was a member of the Sanhedrin. So here we have a Sanhedrin that was desperate with what's his name? God, I can't even remember what from 1 minute here.
The leader of the Sanhedrin?
Huh? No, the Nicodemus that came to him by night.
Yeah.
And snuck up and anyway, he was curious, but he wasn't faithful.
Yeah.
All right. And verse 24, not 25. And a certain woman which had an issue of blood of 12 years, and had suffered many things of many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was nothing bettered, but rather grew worse. When she had heard of Jesus, came in the press behind and touched his garment. For she said, if I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. And straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that virtue had gone out of him, turned about him in the press and said, who touched my clothes? And his disciples said unto him, thou seest the multitude thronging thee, and sayest thou, who touched me? And he looked around about to see her that had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing that she was done, that what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. And he said unto her, daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace and be whole again. Now, let's talk a bit about Mark. Mark was probably 8 or 9 years old when Christ was crucified. And so we know Mark initially, a few years later, Mark became an assistant to Paul and traveled with him. But then Paul got ticked off at him and sent him home. And so then Saul became Peter's assistant or aide. Now, all of the book of Mark is all, for the most part, it's Peter that dictated it to him. But what happened with Peter, because there's no gospel of Peter. And so Peter just dictated to him as he remembered the stories. And that's why we have a gospel named Mark. Mark was never an apostle. So, did everybody know that before? Oh, well, anyway. So here, we have these kind of stories kind of bunched up together. And it may not be literal in terms of how it actually happened. That's what happens in Mark. And Mark was more than any other gospel, almost everybody gets demons thrown out. So if any of the ministries that do deliverance, they all concentrate on the book of Mark, because Mark's casting out demons every other minute, it seems like, when you read it. So anyway, and verse 35. Well, I mean, it's important. The reason we're studying this is we can see what happened with Jairus. Now, here is another story about what faith was. Her faith was one of desperation, the same as Jairus, because of the sick daughter. And so it's this thing why so much of what the televangelists are taking advantage of that audience, which is that we call the desperation pool. They've tried everything, right? And nothing had worked. And so that's probably 30% of, and maybe more of the numbers of people, but it's probably much more than 30% of the money that they take in, because this is the desperation stage. Amen? All right. Verse 34. While he yet spake, there came the ruler of the synagogue, the ruler of the synagogue's house, certain which said, "Thy daughter is dead. Why troublest thou the master any further?" As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he saith unto the ruler of the synagogue, "Be not afraid, only believe." And he suffered no man to follow him. And Peter and James and John, the brother of James. Let me read that again. And he suffered no man to follow him, except for Peter and James and John, the brother of James. And he cometh to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and seeth the tumult, and they that wept and wailed greatly. For when he was come in, he saith unto them, "Why make ye this ado and weep? The damsel is not dead, but sleepeth." And they laughed him to scorn. But when he had put them all out, he taketh the father and mother of the damsel, and them that were with him, and he entered in where the damsel was lying. And he took the damsel by the hand and said unto her, "Talitha kumi," which is being interpreted, "Damsel, I say unto thee, arise." And straightway the damsel arose and walked, for she was of the age of 12 years. And they were astonished with great astonishment. And he charged them straightly that no man should know it, and commanded that something should be given her to eat. So, these three examples of the faith in the New Testament all came from that place of desperation. And when one is desperate about the health of a loved one, or even themselves, then by definition they are poor. Because for at least a time, there's nothing in the world, everything that they have or what wanted in the world is gone. And the only thing left is their desperation and love for either the children here or for themselves to be healed. And so it's back to this position of the gospel is always only to the poor. If you're not poor, you're not going to hear. You'll take and automatically put the name of God on what you do in the world. And that's the opposite of faith. So that's the beginning of the faith in the New Testament. Anybody have any responses to any of this? Anybody see anything?
Yeah, what you just said about the desperation really spoke to me.
I was thinking about what is the inhibitor of faith? It's like fear.
The evil one.
And doubt. You have any more
specific? More specific. He is there in every possible case. Whether it's
manifest as what, though, that keeps you from believing? How does that...
But you, because the evil one has to have lost all his control over you. Because there has never been a you. All men died at the cross. And that's why everyone that was born after the cross, there's a mystery happened. They're all the antichrists. They all be instead of Christ. So that's why you and I and the whole human race is the instead of Christ. And there's no negotiation. There's no necessarily a manifestation. It's whatever it is, whether it's, well, it says it's but normally it's the cross preached is the power of God. The power of God to what? To shut up the evil one. To see through the evil one. And that, when that happens, then you have the faith of Abraham and Isaac or Jacob. Otherwise, you're just putting the name of God on the stuff you do in the world. This is why this gospel is so terrible, so fearful. Jews require a sign. The Greeks seek after wisdom. Everybody see that a little bit?
The third comment to that would be then the believers abandon themselves or something.
Pardon?
The believer abandons himself, not seeking after wisdom, not looking for a sign, but laying his life down and abandoning himself.
Right. There's not a next moment. That's why I said you always have nothing to do.
Yeah.
You have no... Because otherwise, if you have something to do, even if you're doing it in the name of God, it's idolatry. And the evil one is constantly trying to resurrect himself from the dead. That's the test. It's hard for us to believe, it's hard for us to imagine that. That's why 1 John 4 is so important, where it says there are many antichrists. Well, with the word many there, it means almost all. Everyone that was born after the cross, by definition, his number is 666, which is the number of, not a man, the number of all men, the number of mankind. You don't have a choice. And you are, so that's why it's only to the poor, because you have to come to the end of the evil one's reign. In you, you're not going to improve. You're not going to get any better. Probably get worse. Because then you figure out a way to keep the evil one and do it in the name of God. This is why they'll kill you and think they're doing God holy service. The moment you tell them all their plans and ambitions and hopes and dreams are of the evil one. Did anybody watch 60 Minutes last night? It's a repeat, but I hadn't seen the one before. But it was who's the mayor of New York for so many years?
Giuliani.
Who?
Giuliani.
No, the guy that's a billionaire.
Bloomberg.
I didn't hear if he said it. But it was an interview with him. I mean, he is so far from being from the. He's worth like $50 billion. And he's going to be nice and try to get into heaven. Because he's going to give a lot of it away with that Bill Gates thing and what's his name, other guy. They're all giving a lot of money away. But it's look what I'm doing for all these people. It's like, it made me just shiver. I mean, it was so, to me, it was so evil. Because he can never, unless some tragedy happens, he can never be in a position of poverty. Anyway.
Well, speaking of Luke, they have another Luke in the world today. Sarah just went to the hospital.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
And that's her third boy is going to be named Luke.
Wow.
So.
Well, we'll pray for it. All right, take it, big guy.